today is a very special day, which has great significance to those who will be taking lifelong vows. According to our calendar for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, this is the day of the incorporation of ISKCON in the United States of America. In one sense, it can be said that it officially is the appearance day of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada would often acclaim that ISKCON was his body, but more than his body. Srila Prabhupada was often inspired by the words of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that one must take the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. At the Gaudiya Math at Ultadung Junction Road in Calcutta, upon their first meeting, Srila Saraswati Thakur gave Srila Prabhupada the order to take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the whole world in the English language. This was the first instruction and last instruction of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to our Guru Maharaj. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was performing his leela of disappearing from this world, he was living at the Purushottam Gaudiya Math at the Chatak Parvat in Sri Jagannath Puri Dham. He wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, who was then in Bombay. That message told him that he should take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the English language throughout the world. It was with this mission as his very life and soul that he retired from his grihastha life, went to Jhansi, and later to Vrindavan. For many years, he lived at the Bamsi Gopal temple and then Radha Damodar temple, struggling day and night to translate Srimad Bhagavatam so that the mission of his Guru Maharaj throughout the world would have a foundation. He came to Bombay, and from here he was given by the mercy of Sri Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna the means by which he can go to the Western world. On that cargo ship, Jaladuta, heart attacks, seasickness, terrible, terrible trials and tribulations he passed through. Then to Butler, Pennsylvania, where he had a sympathetic but utterly uninterested group of people taking care of him. Then to the most infamous and oftentimes considered dangerous ghetto of New York, the Bowery. Srila Prabhupada wrote many letters to his godbrothers, to financial well-wishers, and even to the Indian government to help him to establish a center in New York City for the purpose of spreading the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. The Indian government considered it impossible. They hardly paid it a second thought. They refused any help. His well-wishers, who had some financial income, he was asking them for help. They considered, at his age and the condition of America, it was impossible. They appealed to him, "Please, Swamiji, come home." And amongst his god brothers, they considered that it was simply an impossible situation. He was wasting his time. Sometimes he was sent a mridanga or a pair of kartals or some milk sweets, but that was all the help he got. He was striving to get one young brahmachari, to come and help him, but even that was refused. In 1965, one day Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a bench in a park of New York City. A man named Mr. Rubin happened to be sitting next to him. He never saw anyone looking like Swamiji before. Out of curiosity, he asked, "Who are you? What is your mission?" Srila Prabhupada told him that on the order of my Guru Maharaj, I have come to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. We have temples all over the world and books being published in great quantities and distributed. But in truth, Srila Prabhupada was alone with the same utterly useless 48 rupees that he brought from India. Could not be exchanged in America. Especially in those days, no one in the world wanted your rupees. What you're foaming at the mouth, working like asses for, the rest of the world considers useless. So, every now and then he would meet someone a little interested. In the Bowery, he met one boy named David. He would tell Swamiji from time to time, "I want spiritual life now. I want realization now." Prabhupada would tell him, "You just follow this process. Be patient. It will all come." So he was living with this boy. At his old age, he had to climb up flights of stairs to get to his apartment. He was regularly taking LSD, marijuana, amphetamines, and other intoxicating drugs. Srila Prabhupada would very politely and compassionately tell him from time to time that these drugs are not good for your spiritual life. But to him, this was not at all understandable. So one day, when crazed by some dangerous drugs, he threatened to kill Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada left that place to be on the streets. And some of his well-wishers decided to help him. But they found him a tiny, small storefront on 2nd Avenue in the Lower East Side. Prabhupada had, at that time, no one dedicated to following any of the regulative principles. But he had a few sympathizers. So in that environment, Srila Prabhupada established his world headquarters. Srila Prabhupada had a vision that from that little room on 2nd Avenue, he would begin a mission that would change the course of history in the world. One day, he announced to the few people who were coming to meet him that I am going to establish here the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. International? This was inconceivable to them. He was one 70-year-old man teaching some different form of meditation called chanting to about 5 or 6 people who at the time had no commitment and hardly any faith. And he was talking about an international society for Krishna consciousness and that this would be the world headquarters. So one of the well-wishers happened to know a lawyer, Mr. Goldsmith. So one day when Srila Prabhupada was giving his lecture in the evening, Mr. Goldsmith happened to come. Previously, Srila Prabhupada had already worked out all the details of what his mission would be through ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada gave lecture. After the lecture, he called on Mr. Goldsmith asking if he had anything to say. This lawyer, first time he ever came to 26 Second Avenue, he stood up and said, "We are today working on incorporating the International Society for Krishna Consciousness as a tax-exempt religious organization. But in order to have an organization, there has to be members. So we need some people to sign their names on this paper so that we can incorporate ISKCON. Any of you can sign." So there was about 6 pages explaining the mission of ISKCON, and not a single person read any of it. They were thinking that we will help Swamiji. One thing is they definitely trusted him. So they signed their names. That was filed, and on this day ISKCON was officially recognized as a spiritual institution. Srila Prabhupada's divine vision was beyond the comprehension of any human beings. He considered ISKCON to be his offering to his spiritual master. And since he taught us that the order of the spiritual master is life and soul, we can also say that ISKCON was not only his body, but his very life and soul. Over the years, Srila Prabhupada took incredible risks due to his unflinching faith in Guru and Krishna. Soon he had 2 centers. The second center was a storefront about the same size in New York, in San Francisco. In Montreal, they rented a bowling alley. Do you know what a bowling alley is? It's a stupid game in America. Big, heavy ball, you roll it on the ground and it hits some pieces of wood, and it's a very important part of American culture. And soon he had thousands and thousands of disciples, millions and millions of books, farm communities, schools, traveling around the world, meeting some of the most important, influential people in society. Srila Prabhupada was especially concerned that ISKCON would have a future. Not only in his short life, he was only preaching for about 10 years around the world, but he considered for the next 10,000 years, ISKCON would be promoting the pure unalloyed teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the whole world. He established that he was the founder Acharya, not because he wanted a high position, but because he wanted to protect the society for all time to come. He said that his books would be the law books of this society, the guiding light for humanity. And in a temple or a publication, if it didn't state Founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Prabhupada, in a very concerned and serious way, would point out this must be there. Srila Prabhupada would tell us that whatever he was doing was by the mercy of his Guru Maharaj. This is parampara. When we take vows of initiation, we should all understand our relationship with Srila Prabhupada. He is the prominent Shiksha Guru of our society for all generations to come. His books, his example, his sacrifice, his eternal mercy is the basis of this mission. And through Srila Prabhupada, we are connected to all of our great acharyas. Srila Saraswati Thakur, Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Thakur Bhakti Vinod, all the way to Sri Rupa Goswami. It was Srila Rupa Goswami who was empowered to perfectly understand the innermost secrets of the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He established this spirit of devotion and philosophy to the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally established Rupa Goswami as our Sampradaya Acharya. As we understand the deep wealth of the heritage of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, naturally our faith and our love for Krishna grows. When we are connected to the parampara, it is not just one person we are being connected to, but to the line of mercy of all the great personalities of our sampradaya. Their blessings, their mercy is profusely available to all of us. The actual connection is not through initiation. At least not through the ceremony of initiation. The actual connection is through our faith, through our dedication, through our willingness to surrender. The ceremony of initiation is a necessary function within the principles of devotional service. The taking of vows formally and accepting a Diksha Guru is very, very important to give us that connection to the parampara. We must understand the spirit of initiation, not simply the formality. The spirit of initiation is we're surrendering our lives. We're taking vows to be faithful, loyal disciples, willing to accept discipline in a spirit of servitude. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed to his spiritual master that I have no qualification. Your mercy is all that I am made of. We understand what is a proper disciple from not only the instructions of the scriptures, but the examples of great personality. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally presented himself as a fool before his spiritual master, listened attentively, and offered service to him. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they presented themselves as the most unqualified, sinful, unintelligent malechas. Although factually they were millions of times more qualified than anyone in the world today. But they felt like this, with straw in their teeth and cloth wrapped around their necks, tears flowing from their eyes, they offered their dandavats in a spirit of total surrender to their guru. Sanatana Goswami was so learned. He was a real scholar. Yet before Lord Chaitanya, he said, "I'm such a fool. And even though I'm such a fool, when people glorify me as a scholar, I believe them. I do not know who I am, where I'm going, where I'm coming from. I do not know why I am suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence. I take shelter of you." He was willing to suffer in prison to serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was willing to relinquish control of millions upon millions of dollars equivalent, beautiful estates, in the service of Lord Chaitanya. From the opulent palaces of Ramakeli, he was sleeping under trees in the forest of Vrindavan. At the very risk of his life, he left his government office. That is the standard that every disciple should be striving. And in our very modern day, the ultimate example of a disciple in our hearts is His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Himself. Whatever sacrifices, whatever austerities, whatever hardships, with great determination He endured for one reason alone, to satisfy His Guru Maharaj. He held nothing back. During initiation ceremonies, Prabhupada would often explain what initiation really means. He would say that it means to understand that death is coming. It will come, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. To live conscious that we are standing face to face with death. What is actually important in life? The things of this world will vanish. We should take none of them seriously. The only reality, the only truth is Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. After suffering births and deaths, millions and millions of times, with mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and children and uncles and aunties and friends, we've now come to this human form of life. The significance of all of our fortunes we have accumulated and everything else, we don't remember a single thing from a previous life. It is material attachments that keep us bound to this repetition of birth and death. Srila Prabhupada explains initiation really means to understand that I am the spirit soul, to live for the soul in the service of Krishna, under the divine guidance of the spiritual masters. The holy name of Krishna is the only means in this age of Kali by which we can be elevated to the perfectional stage of realizing what is the spiritual world. All of Krishna's potencies are within the name. Kali Kale Namurupe Krishna Avatar. In the age of Kali, Krishna has incarnated in His name. And our acharyas, citing from the holy scriptures, have explained to us that everything can be attained if we learn how to properly chant Krishna's name. The Lord's form, qualities, associates, abodes, and even His divine lila and our relationship with Him in the spiritual world are all revealed through sincerely chanting the holy names. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strong in discouraging his disciples to put anything else as a priority over the chanting of the holy names. He explained in this age of Kali, even meditation on the Leela of the Lord is more or less imagination. To actually gain realizations by such meditation, there has to be purity of heart. Therefore, the preference is to purify our heart through the prescribed means, through Harinam Sankirtan, through the chanting of the holy names. Srila Prabhupada persisted to try to instill faith in us that everything will be achieved through chanting Hare Krishna. There is nothing lacking in this process. But in order to continue throughout our life this process of chanting, we must develop a taste for hearing about Krishna. We must have faith. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada has written so many books and has given to us the books in essence of all of the acharyas. But ultimately he taught, it is all to give us complete conviction and commitment to the chanting of the holy names. Without learning how to properly associate with devotees, it is impossible to properly chant the holy names. Without developing a genuine, sincere service attitude toward Guru and the Vaishnavas, we cannot chant Hare Krishna properly. The name is the sound Murti, deity of Krishna. He purifies and reveals himself to that person he chooses to do so. If we do not love the Lord's devotees, however loud we chant the holy name, we will never attract his attention. Therefore, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us the process of being servant of the servant of the servant. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote 8 verses that he left behind, Shikshastakam, which is the systematic explanation of how to chant the holy names of Krishna. Chaito darpana marachanam bhava mahadabhagni nirbhapanam. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur called it the 7-tongue flames of the sacrifice of the chanting of the holy names. Essentially, the holy names cleanses the mirror of the mind and awakens all the transcendental qualities of the soul. Thus, pure unmotivated love for Krishna is revealed. But we must feel ourselves very meek and humble. Mahaprabhu prayed, "My Lord, you have invested all your potencies in your name, but I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them." If we feel ourselves qualified, that is our greatest disqualification. If there's one thing that is especially unique and prominent in Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it's the ultimate necessity on humility. Lord Chaitanya and all his associates demonstrated this. In excess of human capacity. Who is this Raghunath Das Goswami? Son of multi-millionaire landowner. Beautiful wife. Very learned and handsome. In the prime of his youth, he gave it all up. Went to Puri to eat only those rejected, decomposed foodstuffs that the cows spit out because it was not fit for them. Because he actually considered he's not worthy of eating other foods. While living in Vrindavan, he was only taking little buttermilk every few days. One small leaf cup. And yet when he would drink it, he would cry. He was crying thinking, "I'm such a sinful person. that I'm taking so much time away from my service to Krishna just to enjoy this body and senses by drinking this buttermilk. Those few seconds that it took to drink the buttermilk, he considered himself the worst sinner, even though he was 22 hours a day immersed in devotional service. Hardly 2 hours for sleeping, eating, and all other bodily necessities. But there was no pride, utter humility. This is Gaudiya Vaishnavas. This is what attracts Krishna. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sehishnuna, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. To be more humble than the straw in the street, tolerant as is the tree, eager to offer all respect to others, and expect none for oneself. Raghunath Das Goswami, although he was living in such a humble state, he was offering his obeisances minimum 1,000 times a day to Vaishnavas. Now, obviously, he was living in a secluded forest, which was then Radhakund. It's not that he would necessarily meet 1,000 people a day. If he met 2 people, he would offer 500 obeisances to each one. He would offer 1,000 obeisances to the devotees every day. Minimum. As a regulative principle, not as a formality, but as an expression of his actual humble appreciation and desire to serve the Vaishnavas. And he is the Prayojana Acharya, the person teaching the highest limits of ecstatic ras. So if we learn to chant the holy names in a proper spirit of humility, devotion, then Krishna will certainly reveal ultimate truths of Goloka Vrindavan from within our hearts. Without the guidance and mercy of the spiritual masters, we have no hope. We begin our chanting of the holy names by sincerely trying to guard against the 10 offenses. We should contemplate and understand what really are these 10 offenses and be very, very careful in this regard. Of course, if one is actually humble, if one really is in a service attitude, then there is no offenses. But as long as we are not living by those principles in order to attain that stage, we must carefully guard against these 10 offenses. Let us all recite the 10 offenses aloud. To blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. Consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. To disobey the orders of the spiritual master. To blaspheme the Vedic literature or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. To consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be an imagination. To give some interpretation to the holy names of the Lord. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna as one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruitive activities, karma. To instruct the faithless person about the glories of the holy name, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. It is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. Every devotee who claims to be a Vaishnava must guard against his offenses in order to quickly achieve the desired success, Krishna prema. We also vow to follow the 4 regulative principles. No illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, or meat eating. If we follow these principles and learn how to properly serve Vaishnavas, and chant Hare Krishna, then very quickly we will attract the unlimited mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga. That mercy is our only hope. It is the exclusive means by which we can approach bhakti. Today, we should contemplate on what Srila Prabhupada has done for all of us, individually and collectively, and truly dedicate our lives in the spirit of the servant of the servant of his servants. Many of us have seen that there has been tragedies, great upheavals and difficulties in the ISKCON society over the years since Srila Prabhupada has left. But these are great opportunities for us. Where there's a great need, there's a greater opportunity for service. By our dedication and commitment, and by our good example, we should try to restore the real integrity of Srila Prabhupada's light mission. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.